It's all here.
A no-hitter, grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment, every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Jason Goff and Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we are going to break down the difficult news for the Bulls regarding Coby White's shoulder surgery and what that means for the roster moving forward. We will also explore Arturis Karnišovas' ties to Nikola Jokic and what that might mean for the future European influence on the Bulls roster. And we will delve into Coach of the Year ballot results and a new book coming from Scottie Pippen in the fall.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, Rob, let's get right into it. Tough news, obviously. I've received so many emails of this ilk over the years covering the Bulls that when you see a header email that says injury update, you are typically fearing the worst. And this may not be the worst given the timing of the injury that it happened in June, but Coby White underwent shoulder surgery. My sources told me that he tore his labrum playing basketball in Puerto Rico. The team said that it happened in basketball activities away from the team. And they said he will be reevaluated in 4 months. Our reporting said that would be a best case scenario, obviously. And when they say reevaluated, it means it could be longer. I'm told the back end is probably 6 months. So however you slice it, a significant blow, obviously one that he will return from. But you know, not the way you want to be spending an off season going into your third season, rehabbing an injury rather than working on your game. And we also know how much Coby works on his game. So, I know you're pretty close to Coby. What are your initial thoughts about the injury and what it means for the Bulls moving forward?
Sure. Well, my mind goes a couple places. First and foremost, I would say just a massive bummer for Coby, the person and the professional. Cause like you said, he is a really hard worker. I don't think anyone would doubt that whatever he was going to go into this offseason and work on, he was going to attack and come into next season kind of with a targeted game plan of things that he would have wanted to do and carry into his third year. You know, Billy, Arturis both talked about at their end of season press conferences how big of a summer this was for Coby, especially because of the ups and downs that he went through starting a point guard throughout this season, moving to the bench, coming back and showing, you know, we've talked about it on this podcast, but I thought meaningful improvement beyond just the hot shooting stretch that he went on at the end of his rookie year. He was really showing growth as a decision maker in his consistency. His consistency as a jump shooter too. And was really finding his niche playing off of Nikola Vucevic, especially, who Billy Donovan talked about a good amount helping Coby and Zach too. So, you know, there are roster ramifications to get to. There are, you know, decisions. How does this affect the Bulls' plans with their own free agents and things along those lines? Obviously, the June 22nd lottery was already seismically important. There's a little bit extra juice in that now because of how much this kind of intensifies the spotlight on the point guard position this offseason. And there will obviously be two pretty good lead guards at the top of the draft. So those are just kind of my first initial thoughts, obviously first to Coby. And then there are ripple effects that come off of that. And then also on the Coby angle, I wrote it quickly in the news post that we did. You wrote it in your column, which is up at NBCSportsChicago.com and hits on some of the themes we're about to get to. But Coby is really in his first two seasons has been NBA seasons has been pretty admirably durable. He's only missed three games. And one of them was a kind of a fluke COVID test thing. It wasn't even really an injury. The other two games were kind of a fluke thing in the second half of this season. So that's something that he, you know, takes as a personal point of pride. obviously you said that you've gotten a lot of these injury update emails over the years, even in my season and a half on the beat, I feel like I've gotten too many. So it's unfortunate, especially in this kind of dead period of all dead periods of the year, to have something unfortunate like this happen. We just got to see what the timeline is, because unfortunately, even the best case scenario, he's missing all or almost or some of training camp. And like you said, given that that's on the best case scenario side of the timeline here, it's always possible that he could miss a chunk of the early part of next season. So unfortunate is how I would describe it if I had to do it in one word.
Yeah. So before we get into the roster ramifications, just tying up a bow on Kobe and his offseason. He missed the two games with the sore neck where he just left the neck. Yeah. So yeah, just been incredibly durable the first 2 years. And again, this is something you're going to come back from, but the timeline, you just play it out, that you just got into it at the end there. If you're talking 4 months, we're talking early October, October 10th, training camp's going to open late September. So he's going to be hitting the court or, you know, reevaluated in 4 months, no conditioning, no off season work, 2 weeks into training camp. And if it goes 6 months, we're talking December 12th. You're missing significant time for the first time in his career. So it is his non-shooting shoulder. So if you're looking for small little kernels of good news, there's one, and it's obviously something that you expect the full recovery from following the surgery from team physician Brian Cole. But yeah, just not good. Not good.
Yeah, especially for a guy, you know, at a young age, 21, it was going to come into his third season, and there's a lot of development work that can be done in an offseason like that. Now that gets subbed for more, you know, rehabilitation skewed stuff. It's just a bummer.
Yeah. So I feel like we're going to be doing the normal pod here, because we're going to break down point guard options, because even before this injury, this was obviously on our radar, the Bulls' radar. It's well documented. The Bulls, engage in trade talks centered around Lonzo Ball in March. Those did not come to fruition. So he'd be one name I would, you know, kind of keep the radar on and the eyes on as we move into the offseason. But it's pretty clear the Bulls are going to be, you know, adding a guard. Now, the question, you know, beyond the roster ramifications with whoever they add, you know, the Tomas Satoransky decision is kind of tied into this as well, because now I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm just throwing it out there for conversation. But let's say they think it's going to be more 6 months and it changes maybe the target that you're going for, or you try to get a more of an impactful guard because you're not going to be without Kobe a certain time. Can you afford to bring Saddle back as a $10 million backup? So this is going to have ramifications not only for Kobe White, but for Tomas Satoransky as well. It's pretty clear they're going to be adding a guard. It was pretty clear they're probably going to be doing so anyway before the Kobe injury. I think this just pretty much seals it. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a couple of the potential names who we've talked about on this podcast before, so we're rehashing a little bit. And obviously, you know, we'll get deeper into this stuff when we get a clearer picture of the Bulls cap situation after the lottery, for example, and you know, as free agency gets closer. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you wrote this, Casey, but I don't think the Bulls front office can afford to overreact to this, in the sense that you can't steer too far away from what the original plan was. You can't panic and overpay a lead guard type guy because you think you might be without Kobe for a chunk of the early part of the season. But you know, without knowing what their plans were originally, we don't know how much this will skew it. Again, you just have to hope that it's not too much and that you don't enter kind of a frenzy mode on it. You know, the names all stay the same, right? Dennis Schroeder is going to be an unrestricted free agency. He's a guy that you brought up at the top of your column. Spencer Dinwiddie has a $12, $13 million player option for next season. You know, coming off a partially torn ACL, but before that had the best season of his career, is in his physical prime. He's a guy that I think would be a great fit, not only for his kind of facilitating ability, but also as a, you know, downhill driving, gets to the free throw line, things like that. Those guys are certainly options. And then you have the margin type guys, you know, the TJ McConnells, the Ish Smiths, the Alex Caruso's. You know, these are names that, you know, if you go to our, you know, we have a top 30 free agent ranking on our site, or even go to like a place like SpotTrack who just lists them all out. Any number of these like mid-level exception type guys, depending on if the Bulls are operating with the room exception, if they're under the salary cap line, which is $5.5 million, or if they're over the cap line and then it's, you know, closer to $9-$10 million. So we'll see. I'd be interested if the plan was to go margin signing though, and address it in that way. And of course there are trade options too, I should mention. I'll be interested to see with that Satoransky thing. You know, there's, I think, one school of thought where you would think, well, could they afford to retain him, or might they prefer to shed, you know, the $5 million that isn't guaranteed in his salary? There's also, you know, a school of thought where if you want to go the, you know, add a third guard to the rotation along with Kobe and Zach, does it give you more motivation to keep Sato if you're without him for a month or two in the season, just so you're not left completely hanging in terms of just having two viable point guards on the roster? Because, like, who was the guy beyond Kobe and Sato this year, really, that was going to shoulder lead ball handling duties? Obviously, a lot of offense ran through Zach. Garrett Temple brought the ball up some. Patrick Williams brought the ball up some. They never really turned to Devon Dotson throughout last year. He's not guaranteed to be back next year. I mean, his two-way deal expired, so we'll see how that plays out, I suppose. But it'll be interesting, to say the least. I think it really, really shines a spotlight on the Satoransky thing in a way that, if there wasn't already one on it before, it's even more pressing to watch now. But the one thing we could say for sure, it seemed like it was going to be on the agenda to address the point guard position this offseason. I don't know if you call it a priority now. That even feels too soft. It has to be a necessity. I mean, it's really, really a pressing item now, if it wasn't before, and it was before. But now down the guy who started 54 out of the 69 games that he played at the position last year, a guy that showed promise at the end of the year. You know, even if you weren't sold on him as the long-term kind of point guard of the future, you at least knew he was going to eat minutes and probably productively eat minutes at that position, especially after, you know, expected improvements this offseason or whatever. It's really a big hole that leaves in the rotation, especially offensively. And it becomes so, so crucial that the Bulls address that and obviously address it in the right way.
Yeah. So two last things for me before we wrap up this segment. You know, obviously you mentioned June 22nd. We're going to be speculating on this stuff, obviously, through that and then into free agency, because, you know, obviously if they finish, get really lucky in the lottery and get the one or two pick, you have to believe, or maybe even top three pick, you'd have to believe they'd address a lead guard in that scenario, because a lot of the guys in that projected 1 to 3 range are that type of player, with, you know, Suggs and Cunningham and things like that. So that's one domino that needs to fall before, you know, that will help inform our speculation. And if they, you know, don't cash in lottery luck and the pick conveys to the Magic, then yeah, they've got to address the position via trade or free agency. One last name I'd throw out there, and it's, I've mentioned on the podcast before, but I think this is the first time, I put it in a mailbag once, but I put it in print in my column at NBCSportsChicago.com. You know, just another name to kind of keep an eye on, or a situation to keep your eye on, is Jalen Brunson from the Mavericks, because, you know, he's got a non-guaranteed deal, but, you know, is extension eligible. And the Mavericks are in a situation where they've basically clearly said, we want to re-sign Tim Hardaway. He's not coming cheaply. From my seat, the Porzingis deal is going to be a tough one to move. And given that the Porzingis-Doncic fit is, you know, not really producing playoff results at this point, you have to think that they want to try to aggressively improve that roster. So could Brunson be gettable in that scenario, that given that they have the other priority with Tim Hardaway Jr.? Just something to keep an eye on. So plenty of stuff for us to speculate. Unfortunately, it comes to the expense of a hard worker and somebody firmly in the Bulls' plans. But let's hope it's more on the short term than the long term. And best wishes for a speedy and full recovery for Kobe White.
That was my vacation. So, yeah, that was my vacation, guys. And luckily, nobody will hear about it. All right, welcome into the Bulls Talk Podcast, brought to you by Coors Light. I'm still looking and smelling like vacation, but the fellas are together and we are going to talk about some basketball. We got Tony Gill, we got Casey Johnson, and of course we got Rob Schaefer. So fellas, I'll tell you this now. I have been doing the greatest cram session that has ever been seen by a person, because I don't normally go on vacation. So I missed all the basketball for the entire week. Like, I got on a boat at one point, and a dude was sitting next to me saying, man, I can't believe LeBron's ass. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like, what happened? Like, I barely knew about the AD injury, and then what happened at the end of that series and all the other foolishness. So I've been cramming, like, for the last 2-3 days watching as much basketball as possible. I've caught up on some of the latest stuff, obviously. And we got to get into some of these rumors, because as soon as I touched back down, people were like, hey, you want to talk about Damian Lillard? And I'm like, for what? And then I found out for what. So wherever you guys want to start, we got the topic list in our group thread. Wherever you guys want to start, I am with it because, man, I'm gonna get caught up with you guys because I haven't touched baseball, and two, you know, it's time for us to talk some basketball. So you guys want to start with the playoffs, and you know, Jokic is the MVP. Would you want to get into some other stuff? You want to go straight to the Bulls stuff? You want to get to the Dame Lillard stuff? Where would you guys like to start?
I'd like to start with the Bucks Nets predictions that we made on the last podcast.
I heard about that. I did hear. No. For the people who aren't in tune to every podcast, and if you're not, shame on you. What were those predictions, KC?
Yeah, I don't like to take victory laps too early, so maybe I should walk that back a little bit. But I did say the Nets in five, whereas my esteemed colleagues Tony Gill and Rob Schaefer picked the Bucks in seven. And I'm not saying that series is over.
The round series scared the shit out of them, didn't it?
And I'm not saying that series is over, but I am saying I haven't seen 49-point deficits in the playoffs too often. So anyway, but I digress. So let's spin it forward. Let's start with the second round because I think it's been an entertaining playoffs. What do you guys think?
Well, I think that Bucks Nets series hasn't even started yet, right? Isn't that the old adage? Until someone wins on the road.
All those draws.
And that's a cautionary tale too, because of recording. We did this a lot during the season, but recording a podcast the day before a game. I mean, I cannot imagine how dumb I look. I don't even remember the particulars of what I was saying.
Nah, that's the heat, Rob. Nah, stand on it. Hey, cement it. Say the Bucks going to win in six. Say it right now.
2-0 has been done before. But I was watching – I saw a clip from Emmanuel Acho on Speak for Yourself, which is a Fox Sports One show. He was bemoaning this exact thing. And he's like, I do enough in a day to make myself look stupid. I do enough being on TV, or for me it's on a podcast, to make myself look – uninformed and underprepared and things like that. I do enough of that. I don't need Chris Middleton to do it for me. So he's been doing that lately. No, let's go to the Jokic thing though, because there's a Bulls tie in there. Casey wrote about it. It's on our website right now. I think it's still leading the website as of today. Just on the role that Arturis Karnišovas played in finding, bringing Nikola Jokic over from Serbia, developing him. Obviously he's not there to see him win the MVP with the Nuggets organization, but he certainly played a big role in this rise that he's made. And, you know, it just shines a spotlight on how much the Bulls need that to happen here. And maybe not on the same scale, but just, you know, obviously without two future first round picks, the onus is on them to, you know, have creative solutions to the problems that are facing the franchise right now, to hit on these kind of second round, or again, not on MVP level, but on a starter rotation player level, maybe something like that. But to hit on the draft capital that they do have left, KC, what motivated you to write that piece, and kind of what did you uncover as you were kind of reflecting about AK and Jokic, and kind of what it says about what the Bulls need kind of going forward, seeing that?
I kind of had some fun saying no pressure, Marko Simonović, right? I mean, he's the 44th pick. Jokic is 41. But it actually took me back to when the Bulls and Nuggets played in March, and I got on a Zoom and asked Jokic about Arturis, and you could just see the bond that Jokic has with Arturis. And you know, this is not just it's germane just to those two. I mean, obviously, Jokic has incredibly strong bonds with many people in the organization. And I don't want to overstate Arturis's role in this situation, because Tim Connelly is the president of basketball operations, and they have a strong international scouting staff. But, you know, just the fact that Simonović is playing for the same club team in Serbia as Jokic, and just it to me opens up a window to kind of maybe some moves you might be seeing in the future, obviously with that first draft and stash that Arturis had with Simonović in the second round. And just, you know, how well connected he is throughout the international scouting world. That's something that kind of, you know, it brought me back to mind of that. With the selection of Patrick Williams, we've been so hyper-focused on Patrick Williams throughout the season, and rightfully so. He's a fourth overall pick. He's first round pick. He's an American kid, but just between, the Simonović pick and Arturis' ties to Jokic. And then just this rumor that bubbled up about, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. Is it Micić?
Micić.
Micić.
Very Micić. Cool. Yeah.
From what I've been.
It just opens up, it re-engages your mind that these are the avenues that you're going to start seeing this front office take. And it's not to say that the old regime didn't. I mean, obviously scouted and drafted or acquired Nikola Mirotic in a draft day trade. But I just think you're going to see more of these kind of connections and these kind of through lines as Arturas and his staff build out the roster over the coming years.
Yeah, obviously, right. That was the selling point, that there's no gym that he's not going to be able to get into or hasn't been in. So when you got a whole bunch of guys who have an IC at the end of their name, I would hope that we could procure the good one in this city. Right. So watch it. I mean, Nikola Jokic getting an MVP or winning the MVP, right? He's the first undrafted player to do so, right? If I'm not mistaken, or not undrafted, but
lowest draft pick ever.
Lowest draft
in the, yeah, in the modern era. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. Lowest draft pick ever to win the MVP. You mentioned Tim Connelly, but of course, Arturas has something to do with that scouting and that selection and that development as well. So, Bulls fans can hope that this thing is going to look like Denver is looking, because it's part of the architecture of the infrastructure that was there is here now. So yeah, man, having every access to every gym in the world, this is what you're going to see. You're going to see these kinds of guys, the draft and stash guys. Hopefully they can make a dent. And as you mentioned, yeah, man, we were hyper-focused about Patrick Williams, and a lot of that at the end of the season, you know, was to his detriment, because we were focused on what he was supposed to be. But there's a lot to uncover still. And it seems like with the international flavor of basketball becoming the flavor of basketball. I mean, let's face it. You got two Bogdanoviches still in the playoffs playing major roles, right? Like it used to be Kukoc and Dino Raja, and then the ghost of Arvydas Sabonis, who everybody talked about. And by the time he got here, he was done because of his knees. Now, you know, guys getting drafted in the first couple of picks that are international players, or, you know, these prospects that used to have this grainy footage. Now we have a little bit more precise nature in which we could scout and talk about these guys, because it isn't Nicholas, you know, Skittishvili anymore. It's dudes that we can actually go out and watch long and ample tape on. So I'm with it. You know, whatever's going to make this team better. If Arturas Karnišovas has to go to someplace in Serbia or has to go someplace in Turkey to find a point guard. I mean, because look at Denver's point guard, right? I mean, there are guys who you don't have to be Luka Doncic. You know, you don't have to be this dude is going to be the next thing, no matter where he's from, guy. You just got to go out there and get tough basketball players who are disciplined and responsible and play the kind of way that you want to play. And you could see that with Denver. If you don't fit that style, they moved on from you. And on top of that, they roster down. A guy like Paul Millsap was very important to that team a couple of years ago. Now he's a rotational player at best, because they've pushed the roster down, not only with the international flavor, but with scouting and development. And, you know, the joke about Bol Bol, like there's still guys that we don't know enough about on that roster. So hopefully that is what's happening here with the Bulls. I'd like to ask you guys, though, watching that Denver thing, when you make the trade for Vucevic, doesn't it seem like you skipped like that process of, all right, we're going to drop this guy in. He doesn't work, but we got time because the clock hasn't really started. Does it seem like that when you make that kind of trade, where you don't have the leeway to bounce around with certain guys that you may think needs more than a year? Like, don't you press that button when you make this trade, though?
Yeah, I kind of think so. I actually was having a similar thought the other day, Jason. That's interesting because a common refrain of Arturas's has been there's no skipping steps here. Like, he said those exact words multiple times. I think he definitely said them at his end of season presser, and then obviously at his post hiring, and kind of as things were developing with other hires and preseason and midseason media availabilities and things. It does seem like a trade like that could be viewed that way, because you do give up the two future firsts, and not only do you do that, like you said, you start the timer, not necessarily on like people's jobs or anything like that, although that is an underlying layer of everything. You start the timer on, you know, Zach LaVine is due for an extension next offseason at the latest. And now you've committed to building around him. And it's a situation where, you know, you have to show the aptitude to compete now to really justify a big investment there and to also sway Zach, who, again, no indication he wants to be anywhere but Chicago. But there's a lot riding on this season for that reason. There's a lot riding on the season because we don't know what they're going to do in terms of their cap situation this offseason. But say they do operate over the cap, or they kind of make minimal marginal moves and try to work the margins a little bit. If they do go that route, they could position themselves to have, you know, cap flexibility or significant cap space next offseason. It's, you know, projected right now. We learned with this free agent class the danger of projecting what a free agent class is going to look like, and then, you know, extensions happen, and, you know, guys exit the market for various reasons. The Bulls are in a situation where if they don't push in more chips this offseason immediately, they could be a cap space team next year. And again, that puts a lot of onus on this year to be a team that is perceived up and coming, to be competitive, to give reason beyond the intangible. Okay, we're player first. Okay, we care about winning. You know, it gives you 1 year to really put results behind that, and potentially try to sway guys later. So I've been thinking about that too. It is interesting. And what you said about Campazzo is interesting too. When I was looking at those Mišić rumors, obviously I don't think any of us have watched or studied enough of Mišić to contribute a ton to the discourse about him, but he is, you know, a 27-year-old league guard. He has a wealth of international experience. He just won EuroLeague MVP. His team won the Turkish Super League to Efes. So, you know, he obviously, beyond, you know, the statistics, he put up 17-5, shot 39% from three in EuroLeague. That's impressive given that level of competition. He's also a guy that, you know, if and when he were to come over, it sounds like he would only come over for a starting gig. He comes over with a track record. He's not necessarily, you know, a young prospect that you would have to wait on necessarily. He could be an immediate contributor. So that is an interesting thing to look at, because a guy like Campazzo, some people are aware of this and present the proper context, but some people don't when they talk about him. You know, you talk about him like a rookie, but he is 30 years old and he's from Argentina, and been on the stage. So that's the benefit of having, you know, feelers and expertise out in, you know, places overseas or abroad and otherwise. But that's interesting that you mentioned that skipping steps thing, Jason.
I've been thinking about that too of late.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We can move on to the next on our little topic list. So we talked Jokic MVP. I got another award question for the two of you guys that
all are right
tied to it. I don't believe we've talked since Tibbs won Coach of the Year. To me, I thought two guys were equally deserving, or at least both deserving, in him and Monty Williams. Do you think the panel of voters got that one right, going Tibbs over Monty?
What was Tibbs over Monty?
Yeah.
I think Monty Williams was cursed with Chris Paul, right? Like, yeah. Chris Paul has been dubbed, and going back to the Clippers days, I always thought, like, at some point he's going to have to win something for all the accolades of, like, the pantheon of greatest point guards to ever play. But 2 years in a row, he's turned programs around. I think Monty Williams, he might have just suffered from Chris Paul. Like, he obviously benefited from Chris Paul being on his squad, you know, having the record that they did and playing as well as they have in this postseason. But I think he might be sacrificed with that vote because Chris Paul is considered the de facto, not just leader, but, like, he's the – Devin Booker is the – arguable some nights, but he was the face of the Phoenix Suns. And we know that Monty Williams, a good coach, whatever the case may be. But on top of it, he's got the New York vibe. Nobody expected anything of the New York Knicks. I won't say a whole hell of a lot was expected of the Suns, but when you throw Chris Paul in a back Devin Booker, you expect. So I think they made the right in Tibbs. I also understand that Williams could have easily have won it. He just had, you know, he got a Hall of Famer on his squad, whereas it's Tibbs is doing it with, you know, a bunch of also ran formation projects, which, you know, Derrick Rose is a good player. You know, Julius Randle is a good player, but the feel of it and the look of it, it looks like it's more gritty and it's tougher to do with that team, obviously, than it is in the West, which is tougher, but tougher to do with than having Chris Paul and Devin Booker, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and Rob, a couple things. I mean, first of all, every year that award has, you know, not controversy, but it's so hard to. I mean, there's every year there's three or four candidates. You go, oh yeah, that guy could win. I mean, we haven't even talked about Quinn Snyder. I mean, they're the number one team in the NBA, right? And you know, good on both sides of the ball. So, but as far as the Monty Tibbs discussion, you know, I think it was fine because Monty got more first place votes, but Tom ended up on more ballots. So, in some ways, you could say the voting body got it right because. You know, Monty got more first place votes, but Tom ended up with more points. Both guys did remarkable work. Suns jumped 17 games. Nobody expected them to be, you know, taking that kind of jump. But did anybody even pick the Knicks for the playoffs? And then they, you know, come away with right. First round and home court advantage. You know, and Tom does what he does. He maxes out his team and gets it to play to its, you know, highest potential. So either one of those winners would have been fine in my view, you know, and Snyder again, you know, he finishes third, but he did a hell of a job too. So, you know, that's kind of the story of that award every year is, oh man, somebody got screwed because there's just always so many good coaching performances throughout the NBA.
Yeah. I had no gripe with it just because, you know, I think they're both deserving. With Tibbs, you have a roster that didn't turn over that much. And he got, what, 20 plus wins more production out of it, career years across the board. Just an incredible 1 year coaching job. I love the stat that you had in your write up on that, KC, that he's the second coach in NBA history to win coach of the year in his first year with two different franchises. I mean, the guy's just so impressive. And then with Monty, I mean, they've been building that there for a couple of years. That's the thing. Chris Paul gets so much credit for coming in and he deserves it for coming in and kind of taking them to the next level. But I mean, you look at guys like DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, Devin Booker, obviously, like they've been developing for years, and a lot of that's under Monty's watch. I think another thing people forget is that team started 8-8. They end 51-21. So that, I mean, it's just a heck of a coaching job to get all that talent to coalesce in the way that it is. And I mean, it's a regular season award, obviously, but I will just say at the end that it's been tremendously fun to watch Phoenix in the postseason. They really got a shot here, Jason, when you say – Chris Paul's got to win something. I mean, they really, really got a shot as much as
they do
that he's been on in his career. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that resolves.
Yeah. Who do you guys think is the best coach in the NBA though?
Sheesh. That's a good question.
I mean, like after the Spurs run is over, do we still have, is the Pop thing still on fumes in terms of he currently is the best coach in the NBA, or is there another name or two names that we can start to throw in there more regularly now that the Spurs have kind of come back to earth? And it's not saying that Pop isn't still a great coach, obviously, but, you know, when you got a 17-year run, you know, that's healthy.
Yeah, I think there's I have a hard time picking one. I just think there's always a bunch of names like in that top five or six conversation. The guys we've talked about.
If you had a franchise, Rob, who if you had any pick, any coach. I know it's, you know, young roster, old roster, all these things matter, right? So whatever you want the roster to be, like customize it to your life. Who is the guy or girl that you're going with?
I'll give a something that might be something of a hot take after this season.
Here it comes.
I like Nick Nurse. I like Nick Nurse and the job that he's done with that team. He obviously is a championship level coach. I think in terms of being a tactician, he's as good as anybody. And, you know, in the limited narrative, Casey, you actually know Nick a lot better than I do. Obviously I've only met him or never met him, but I've only seen him interacted with him or observed him over Zoom. He just has a charisma about him. Seems like a good leader. They've had just such a tremendous amount of player development success dating back to when he was an assistant on that staff. He's kind of the off the beaten path choice that I would probably pick for this, but I, you know, you guys know me, I shudder at having to pick one and being kind of boxed into a take. That's always my, that's always my least favorite thing. But I'm curious what you guys would say to that question, and Casey, if you know, you know, if you have anything to add on the Nick Nurse element there.
I would, as far as adding to the Nick Nurse, what I like about that, and I'm not saying he's my pick because that's an impossible question, but
But
what I like about that answer is you saw it just in the circumstances of these, you know, last couple seasons with the bubble experience, and then obviously the season and all the challenges. Is he's a guy who's nothing phases him. He has seen it all, and he's not afraid to try, you know, kitchen sink stuff, you know, with boxing ones or a zone or what have you. I mean, you know, he'll try atypical, you know, NBA stuff just because that's what he's comfortable with. He's been in every situation from, you know, the low level experience that he has, or the lower level experience that he has, you know, in his career, slugging it out to make it to the NBA. So I like that. I like that big, and a guy that really relates to players. I mean, you can see it. The players really respect him and like him. He's comfortable in his own skin, doesn't take himself too seriously. So I like that pick. I would still probably go with Pop, just, you know, he's got the pedigree, got the history, got the reputation, and he's at the get off my lawn stage of his career, where, you know, it's it's like, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He knows how to hold people accountable, and he's probably not going to be for everybody, but that's why that organization has been so successful for as long as it has, because they identify people that can, you know, handle that culture and handle that coaching. So I would still, but you know, you could rattle off 3-4 guys. I always say guys like, and it's funny because both these guys bowed out in the first round, but you know, guys like Spoelstra and Carlisle often get overlooked, but then, you know, they're coming off disappointing playoff performances. But those guys would be on top of their game, along with, you know, the people in these, in the coach of the year this year that we've already talked about, it with Monty and Tibbs, and, you know, Steve Kerr didn't forget how to coach. I mean, he's a good coach. So, I mean, it's, you could go 8-9-D probably with that answer.
Yeah. Look at that. Look at my two objective guys giving me some subjectivity, but making sure it came back to the objectivity. That's why they pay y'all the big bucks. For me, it would be because I might be biased. I am biased because I got a chance to watch him work for a couple of years down in Atlanta, like before every game. Because while the pregame show was happening, you know, I was getting ready for it. I was doing my actual radio show and watching him work out with players and watching how he interacted with guys who were struggling. And, you know, it's kind of like where you see a pitcher not doing something right mechanically, and you're like, all right, who's going to tell him? And how are we going to accept it? Because you can tell a pitcher anything. His shoulder's flying open, or, you know, he's got to keep his glove tucked because he's tipping his pitches. But it takes a great pitching coach to not only tell him what he's doing, but have him accept it in the way that he's going to actually fix it. Not think about it and fret about it, not have less conviction with the next pitch, but actually fix it in that moment and get back to being yourself. And that guy for me would be, and it's going to sound lame because, you know, they had the best record in the league, but, you know, Quinn Snyder, if you look at Quinn Snyder at every stop, it's never been the basketball stuff, right? Like whether it be Mizzou, he had to go over to Russia, you know, Atlanta. I watched that dude in Atlanta take Dennis Schroeder, who had no clue how to play point guard in the NBA. Like, no clue how to even deliver a pick-and-roll pass. Dennis Schroeder got drafted because he had crazy measurables. Like, he pretty much measured out like Rondo. Like, that's the thing. Huge hands, long arms, you know, agility out the wazoo, a skill set that was better than Rondo's when he came out of Kentucky, but still super young. And I watched that dude every single pregame for an hour and a half drilled Dennis Schroeder to the point where there were times where Dennis was like, F this, man. Like, if I'm not getting it, I'm not getting it. And then there were other times where Quinn Snyder stayed on his ass and made him the point guard that you see today. So if Mike Conley takes a bye-bye, you know, he's got a guy that he already developed that might, that's going to be a free agent that can slide in, not, and not probably do the job that Mike Conley, but do it differently. And I've just seen him do that with different players, veterans and young dudes alike in Atlanta, and watching what he's done in Utah. The fact that this dude in an NBA that is pretty much telling you, if you don't have a big man that can shoot, his ass ain't going to stay on the floor long. He's doing this with Rudy Gobert. Like, Rudy Gobert's got a decent mid-range jump shot, right? And I'm sure Rob can look up this for me. But you know, it's not like we're talking about Embiid. Like, Embiid still can knock it down from three. He can draw a big man out and make it that much easier for guys to penetrate and move around in that lane. When you've got Rudy Gobert, because of his defensive prowess, and you find a way not only to make an offense work, but make it hum. Like, last year we were talking about what's wrong with the Donovan Mitchell-led Utah Jazz. This year, the Utah Jazz kicked everybody's ass. So, and who knows what's going to happen in the playoffs here. But, man, Quinn Snyder, for my money, you know, I'm not going to be Hawk Carrollson here, but, you know, they might match him, but they ain't going to beat him too many times in terms of coaching. And after timeout stuff and all that stuff that we love as basketball nerds, I dig it, man. I dig what Quinn Snyder does. And the mic'd up segment, or the inside track segment that TNT had the other night, like, he's talking to Donovan Mitchell like a dude who's got equity, you know? And that's all these dudes want. You know, they you could have 15 millionaires in a locker room and all of them going to be insecure unless they feel like they have equity. Like, they feel like they're adding to it. I mean, these dudes are, you know, the vanity and ego that led them here is the same shit that keeps them humming. So as he's telling Donovan Mitchell when he's going off for 40, keep, hey, do it on D and it'll happen on O. Like, some coaches will be scared to get in a dude's head like that, right? Like, hey, don't talk to him. He's about to drop 50. Don't say a word to him. No, he noticed slippage in that game, and he's like, yo, you're 45 in a loss. We've seen this. We saw this last year in the bubble. You and Jamal Murray going at it. What happened? So, Quinn Snyder, for me, man, I rock with him, and it seems like year after year, he's held that position. Now he's finally, you know, is finally reaping those rewards, and his team has grown. But the fact that he could do it with that kind of big, and the fact that, you know, behind the scenes, I've seen how he's worked a little bit. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Quinn Snyder.
They're my pick to come out of the West. I said it. Brooklyn and Utah. Ask Rob. He's got the text to prove it, man.
Brooklyn and Utah. You talk about a fun for us. But, man, it's going to be a hard draw for people who don't watch basketball to figure out why they should or shouldn't like Utah Jazz.
David Aldridge wrote a great column about this in The Athletic today.
Oh, did
about
he?
How, yeah, yeah, like, hey, you've been asking for, you know, you've been complaining about LeBron and the splash for years. Now, you're going to get what you asked for. Are you fan enough of basketball to appreciate what you're about to see? It was fantastic. You guys should check it out.
Yeah. I definitely gonna check it out.
Yeah, it's such a bummer, man. It's just such a bummer that, like, the conversation at all, and maybe it's shifted past it at this point, but just the fact that's even a topic of conversation, oh, this is bad for the NBA or whatever, that, like, there aren't any big markets this far in the playoff. I don't know.
That's because we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Casey. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, there's still some big markets. The Clippers are still playing. But
That too. It doesn't feel like it, right?
And Brooklyn's still playing. I mean, that's a big market too, but it's just not. It's not
right.
It's the
heritage names.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. All right. I got a pivot point here that I want to ask you guys about. Because I got asked about this on radio last night, and I was kind of flummoxed. It was pertaining to something that I was flummoxed by yesterday. I wrote about just a quick newser on Scottie Pippen announced the release of a new memoir of his coming out later this year. And I was surprised. And again, I've talked about this a lot in this podcast. I'm someone that wasn't around for the dynasty years, was barely sentient, was barely alive. So everything I learn or digest or, you know, experience about it is retrospective. Right. And I try to fill in the gaps in my knowledge as much as I can. I was surprised by how polarized the fan reaction was to the news that Scottie was going to drop a book, kind of telling his side of the story of the dynasty and Michael Jordan years and everything like that. I was just surprised that there were so many fans that seemed to kind of be aloof to hearing, you know, what Scotty had to say about this stuff. And I was wondering from you two guys, like,
why would you be surprised though, Rob? Like, you know what these, you see what LeBron has to deal with, and he never even played in the same era as this dude. The fact that the guy who played next to him might have something different to say, like, everybody's running around like their Michael Jordan memories are going to be snatched out of their damn heads if something is different than what he said it was. Like, let's really pay attention to the amount of petty that went into the Last Dance dropping when it did. LeBron was getting ready to go on a title run, and Mike was like, hey, before you MFers forget who is who, here, while your ass is at home, enjoy these next six Sundays. You know what I mean? Like, anybody who speaks about Michael Jordan in any reference or frame that is going to not deify him, you should expect all of that. Like, Scottie Pippen can say, yo, man, there were times where it was tough playing with Michael Jordan, and people will lambast him like he was not an integral part of all those championships. 94-95 was one of my favorite seasons as a basketball fan. I'm 40 years old. I've been watching basketball since I was, what, 5, 6 years old? That is one of my favorite seasons of all time. You know why? Because he has always been one of my favorite players. I've always liked I either like drop-dead scores or dudes who do everything, right? One of the two. Right. And that dude, before it was cool to call people point forwards and all this other stuff and have people who weren't point guards bring up the ball, that dude was learning the game and we were watching it as fans. And when it hit, when the man went away and everything was supposed to sink, that dude was one of the 5 best players in the NBA. And had it not been for a call, we might have been think about the what if, and it's not even a win. What if the Chicago Bulls go to the finals and play the Houston Rockets and lose in 6 games? All that shit about they never did it without Mike and all that goes out the window. And Pip's legacy is increased, right? Because when you're not Mike and you're doing the things that Pippen was doing, and if you got to the finals, oh yeah, it was about to be his world. So, you know, I have never been comfortable with the way that people refer to Scottie Pippen in this town. And you could talk about the no tipping thing. You could talk about, you know, his personal life, whatever you want to get into, that's fine. On that court, that was one of the most beautiful athletes this city, not just the basketball organization, this city has ever seen. Ice, diamond, field, hardwood, don't matter. And the way he gets talked about, like, he doesn't get talked about the way that other champions in the city who weren't as great as he was in his sport get talked about. And it's all because he was a quiet dude. He's a country dude, still is a country ass dude, like no shade, but you know, the vibes. And he didn't have this charisma and this flair, and obviously not the talent and accomplishments that Mike had, but they don't win any of those things without him. And Mike said it, but leading up to it, we had to go through 4 episodes of shitting on Scottie Pippen, though. Like, let's not act like we weren't talking about, like, every time we talked about it, I was like, yo, this was a little uncomfortable that we glossed over 94-95. Like, it was, hey, by the way, Scottie won All-Star MVP. They blew a call. Next thing you know, Michael Jordan was wearing the wrong jersey, and he was having a ball stolen by Nick Anderson. Like, it smash cut to that. Like, that whole season, we were back here watching it like, yo, this dude is special as hell. Like, we had another one, right? Like, it's like if you go from Shaq to Dwight Howard, or you go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, it's like, holy shit, this dude is that guy too. And for whatever reason, I was on the air for his final interview on The Score, where he hung up on us because it was a Chicago Bulls thing, and you know, it was squirrely that last year, and you know, pretty much asked him, hey, Did you take the money and run? And I was like, what answer you think you're going to get out of him? And he hung up the phone. And Terry and Dan were like, I think we got disconnected. And I cracked the mic and I was like, I don't think we got disconnected, boys. You know, like this dude has had, I won't say adverse, but like a tenuous relationship, not only with the organization, but with the city for too long to me. So yeah, if the man want to come out and write a book, none of your Michael Jordan dreams and wishes and memories are being stolen out of your head. Like, I don't get the contempt for Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, I obviously come from an outsider perspective on a lot of this stuff, but I've always gravitated towards Scottie. because, you know, he obviously, like you said, Jason, he comes from humble beginnings. I think just his all encompassing skill set, like the fact that he's a gadget guy that was also a superstar, like he did it all. He's kind of a before his someone who played a style or had a skill set that would have been perhaps more appreciated if it was in an era like today's game. I mean, probably would have been, you know, honed and embraced more. I don't know. And I just, what surprised me about it was just seeing like a guy who seems so historically underrated. Like that's the kind of guy that I would think a city would rally around. And like you said, none of it happens without him. That's part of the promotion around the book. And to be fair, the promotion around the book is pointed, you know, it's The Last Dance wasn't a story about the Bulls. It was a story about Michael Jordan. And this is my story. And none of it happens without me. And like, it's pointed because it has to be, it sounds like, because of the perception. But I'm looking forward. And again, this might come from the outsider thing. Like I am looking forward to just seeing another account, like another firsthand account of how this went, because it's hard to trust that anything is the whole truth when it's only coming from one mouthpiece or anything. And that's why I enjoyed firsthand documents like the Jordan rules, for example. Like that's why I enjoy stuff like that, because I'm more interested in like, you know, the
story,
the objective truth in terms of like learning the history of it. Right. While I did love The Last Dance as much as anything, and it was needed entertainment and it was great. And it was
super well. You knew what it was.
Deserved every bit of acclaim it got. But I'm like really, really looking forward to reading that book and think of it as a must read. And I was, I was just surprised to see a polarized reaction to it.
I can get you a copy of Bill Wennington's biography with Kent McDill. Come on now. I got one of those laying around somewhere if you want to read up until Scotty's comes out.
It's the
prelude.
Kent McDill might have even signed it for me, I believe, one day.
Shout out to Kent McDill.
Scott, you guys have covered it pretty well with Scotty. I mean, you know, I was talking to actually a player from those teams yesterday. We were just catching up because he was laughing about the book news as well. We don't know. I mean, I've read the book, but here's our guess. The marketing around the book is going to be a little different than the book.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Scotty will go full petty and just blast people. I mean, he's got that quality sometimes where he can get on that kick.
Yes, he does.
I was also around him when I was fortunate enough to cover his Hall of Fame weekend induction out in Springfield, Massachusetts. And it was awesome to see him as gracious and appreciative and as humble as he was that weekend, because it really, you could see how much it meant to him. I'm definitely gonna be reading it and looking forward to the book as well. The other thing is, as you know, someone who covered that, a lot of that era, you know, he had enough incidents, high profile incidents, that some fans just never forget him for. I mean, the code shot, you know, at the end of the Knicks game, at the very end of the, you know, in the series that that Jason's talking about, the 93-94 season. You know, so we'll see. But look, I mean, I think what Jason said was spot on. You're not going to find probably a more underappreciated Hall of Fame athlete who won 6 championships and was as
good
as he did it. I mean, so I'm always on the side of just, I feel fortunate to have covered him.
If anything, this Kwame Brown incident has shown me that all that money and everything is cool, but there are dudes who walk around with a lot of resentment because of how their NBA careers played out, how their NBA careers were covered, or both. And I think Scotty's one of those dudes. Like, Scotty legit was like, I'm not going to bet on myself. I'm going to take this money now. And they told him not to. And it turned out to be the wrong move in the end, because he was mad about, like, there's some embarrassment. See, there's some moments in there that, because of the lofty, you know, finances and the prestige and the public persona of being an NBA player, like, there's some embarrassing moments in there, and it's how you navigate those moments, like the sitting out. That's an embarrassing moment. But I, as a fan, I let him handle that embarrassment. You know what I mean? Like, I let him handle that embarrassment. You going to keep embarrassing yourself and keep talking about it? Or was it embarrassing for you and have you accepted it? Or do I really even give a damn because I got 6 championships as a fan? Like, these are the things you have to ask. Like, I don't think there's going to be anybody, you know, running around cursing Adam Burrish and dude who won the 2010 Stanley Cup with the Blackhawks. Like, his relationship with the fan base obviously wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the happiest one at all times, but the joy that he brought me as a fan is different from how I felt about him, right? Like, I can compartmentalize. And it's crazy because in this time where, you know, it's hard to compartmentalize, sometimes you just got to throw whole people away, apparently, because of, you know, something that they have said or done. In those days, I can compartmentalize. Every single June, I knew where I was going to be. Every summer, I was going to watch my favorite team play for a championship because of him. So you could do what you want. If Albert Bell would have taken the White Sox to a World Series title, you can hate them all you want. You can hate them till the cows come home. I know what I got. I don't love AJ Pierzynski. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But hey, won a title with him. And I guess it's how you negotiate it as a fan, obviously. But yeah. I just don't see the percentage in disliking Scottie Pippen as if, you know, you gotta report back to Jordan and be like, hey, I held it down for you. No, dude, whatever issues they had, they had. Like, neither one of these dudes care about you. So it is. Is Damian Lillard going to be a Bull? Let's start some shit.
Rob, you can take this one. You wrote about it.
Yeah, I did. I do not think so. I can run quickly through the kind of empirical salary cap, draft pick capital boring reasons why I don't think so. And Casey, maybe you'll have something to add after. But yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, it's easy for those conversations to happen speculatively when Portland season ends the way it does and Damian Lillard is turning 31 soon. And, you know, he's this guy who's built his entire persona. And I don't doubt that it's what's in his heart too, on this kind of unwavering loyalty, you know, in his personal life and also to the Portland Trailblazers franchise. And it's natural, I think, seeing kind of what sort of situation they're in. I'm not going to call it a dire situation because they made the playoffs 8 straight years, but you fire a coach and you kind of see, you know, 4 out of 5 years, it's the first round exit, and a player of his caliber, you just want more for him. Certainly he has grander aspirations than that. So natural to question what his future with the franchise looks like. I think before we start talking about possible trade destinations, and especially one in Chicago specifically, I need more smoke. I need more public indicators that he wants out of Portland. I don't see them right now, given the fact that he's, you know, not just reported, like he went out on the record and put out names that he prefers for the next coach of the team. So he's clearly going to have input in that search. He's clearly involved in that. Neil Wilshere, their head of basketball operations, came out and said the same thing in his end of season presser. So I'm not convinced that he's on the move this offseason at this point. Things change quickly in the NBA, obviously. If he was to be, you know, it's a question of whether, you know, he has a list of preferred destinations and things like that. Oftentimes when superstars get traded, those things, you know, leak out or are part of the process. I wonder if the Bulls would be on a potential list of his preferred destinations if there were to ever be one now, just because, you know, like we were talking about earlier in the podcast, I think the results still have some bearing out to do beyond the cultural stuff that we've talked about, and is certainly tangible and real and positive. You know, I wonder if the Bulls still have a little bit to go to start attracting these elite caliber guys in terms of, you know, actually winning games and making steps forward, you know, playoff wise and things like that. So that's the first hurdle to me when talking about the Damian Lillard thing. Assuming all that gets cleared, you run into problems like building a package. I mean, he's a guy that his Supermax extension kicks in this next season. So if a trade was to be made after the league calendar flips, you're talking about matching, you know, to within 120% of $39, $40 million. Probably going to take a 4-for-1 player deal for the Bulls to do that. Obviously, it would include Patrick Williams, Coby White, you know, any combination. I wrote on the website.
Al Farouk Aminu.
You know, you could combine the guys. It's going to take a 4-for-1 deal. You know, obviously we don't know how Portland looks at the Bulls young players if, cause you know, obviously if you're trading Damian Lillard, you're sparking a full rebuild. If they see that as kind of a desirable package, no matter what though, you know, that draft capital is going to have to come with it. And for a bunch of reasons that are way too complicated for me to explain on the podcast right now. So I'd again, refer you to the article. The Bulls are a little encumbered in terms of trading first round draft picks because they have traded two future ones. And there's a rule in the CBA called the Stepien rule, which prohibits teams from trading two future firsts in back-to-back years.
Back-to-back.
So until the protections play out on those picks, the Bulls are pretty limited in terms of trading future firsts. You know, they could, again, the details are laid out in the article, but, you know, as a team who doesn't own all their future firsts anymore, it's harder to build a desirable package in that respect than maybe other teams that are in the conversation. Now, the bright side of that, there are a number of teams, especially big market teams, that in recent years have kind of emptied their draft asset chest too for superstar deals. The Lakers with Anthony Davis, the Nets with James Harden, the Bucks with Drew Holiday. So, you know, maybe you could talk yourself into there being less competition in that respect among the traditional powerhouses, but I just see so many hurdles that I'm having a hard time leaning into the Damian Lillard photoshops that that have been cropping up around Bulls Twitter. I'd be happy to be wrong, but I don't see it as likely at this point. And Casey, if you have anything to add on top of that, I would welcome it.
I do not, because I don't think he's going to get traded. At least
there
at
it
least,
is. There
at
is.
Least at least this offseason. So we can probably wrap it up.
Management Tony, you heard anything on Damian Lillard to the Bulls?
No. Management Tony hasn't heard anything. He's too busy listening to love songs in his iPod. So, oh my God, I just said iPod. old Grampy Goff is getting ready to wrap this thing up. And anyway, I mean, you know, when Steph becomes a Laker, Damian could just go and play for the Warriors, his hometown team, and then make it all perfect. You know what I mean? That's obviously what's going to happen here. Because LeBron's not going to have this happen again. We all know that. That's it. We got to wrap this up because there are more important pods that have to be recorded. So for Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, and my main man, Tony Gill, love is in his eyes. I am Jason Goff. Thank you for listening to Bulls Talk Podcast, brought to you by Coors Light.